You are Locked On MLB, your daily MLB podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans, and welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast. We talk about all of Major League Baseball, and I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully on today's episode, which is being dropped as a special Saturday episode for the 27th day of June, 2020. I'm going to talk about two players who helped the Pittsburgh Pirates win the World Series in years past in Game 7s. Two players I bet you've forgotten. This show is available on the free and easy-to-use Himalaya podcasting app. We're also available wherever you get your podcasts, including the website, which is lockedonmlb.com. When you're staying at home during these trying times, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB or check out some of the other great shows on the Locked On Podcast Network, including Locked On Fantasy Baseball with Scott Cullen. Yeah. Follow us on Twitter at LockedOnMLB_net. Follow us on Instagram at LockedOnMLB. I'm your pal, Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. It's been a while since the Pittsburgh Pirates have been in a World Series, specifically 1979. You know, and all things being considered, I talked yesterday about whether or not I should be a Mariners fan. All things considered, if geography was not an issue, I probably would have grown up a Pirates fan. The reason is using the rule of sevens and how your basically your sports fandom starts to coalesce, starts to crystal, starts to become reality when you're around 7 years old. And that's when I saw the Pirates defeat the Baltimore Orioles in the wonderful 1979 World Series. I had a yellow Pirates jersey and one of those flat Pirates caps. Willie Stargell and Dave Parker and John Candelari and Bill Madlock and Burt Blyleven and Omar Moreno and all those players on that team became among my favorite players, along with the Fred Lynns and the Carl Yastrzemskis and the Butch Hobsons and the Jim Rices of the world with the Red Sox. And I felt madly for the Pirates teams led by Bonds and Bonilla and Van Slyke and Doug Drabeck in the early 1990s. And man, oh man, was I rooting for those Pirate teams in the mid-2010s, which, yes, Cubs fan with an 8, they would have gone on to win the pennant if they had won the 2015 wild card game. I proved that in a simulation. Pirates have always been a team that have interested me, and also because of their history. I became fascinated by Willie Stargell, but I also became fascinated by Roberto Clemente. He was one of the most interesting figures in the history of baseball, and sadly one of the tragic ones as he died in a heroic way. He died on New Year's Eve helping transport supplies to Nicaragua, which was hit by an earthquake. It's not even his native country. This is what he was doing on New Year's Eve. You were probably getting drunk or you know, going to a party. He was on an airplane filled with supplies, making sure they got into the hands of the right people. He became one of the great figures in baseball history, and reading about him is fascinating. The 1971 team is one of the most interesting teams in baseball history. It was the first team ever to field an entire starting nine without a single white player on it. It was kind of the last step for the integration of the game, where it wasn't just the superstars, but it was the everyday players and the relievers and the starters and the utility players. That team also had Doc Ellis. And the film No-No, a documentary, is a fascinating documentary about former Pirate star Doc Ellis. And you're reading about some of the other things, including the, you know, Honus Wagner and Pye Trainer. It just, you know, Ralph Kiner and some of the other players who have played for the Pirates, and their history is just really fascinating. And I've been to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's a lovely city. I went to see a game at Three River Stadium. I have yet to go to PNC Park. I'm dying to because it looks absolutely gorgeous. But the Pirates are a team that have fascinated me over the years, and that I find myself, if they're not playing the Red Sox, I'm rooting for them. Now, I talked about this player when Michael X. Ferraro was a guest on my show, but he's one of my favorite figures in Pirates history, and that's John Red Oldham. Now, I'm a little fascinated by this guy. He is the most obscure player to ever clinch a World Series. More obscure than Mike Montgomery, who came out of the bullpen in 2016 to get the save and clinch the Cubs World Series. Keep in mind, he didn't even play on the Cubs until mid-July, and before Game 7 of the 2016 World Series, Mike Montgomery had zero professional saves. He's a pretty obscure person to close out a World Series, but do you want Red Oldham as more? I would say he's the most obscure pitcher to ever clinch a Game 7 of the World Series. And Red Oldham began the 1925 season. 1925, when the Pirates beat the Washington Senators for the World Series, he began that season in the minor leagues. He would end the next year, 1926, in the minor leagues and never reach the major leagues again. But in between those times, he would experience World Series glory. Now, the Pirates won the pennant in 1925, and they faced the defending World Series champion Washington Senators and their superstar pitcher Walter Johnson in the World Series. And right out of the gate, it looked like no contest. The Senators ran up a 3-1 lead in the series, and Johnson was the big reason. He threw complete game victories in two of those games. Now, the Pirates stayed alive in Game 5. They won a back-and-forth game, and then they won Game 6. They overcome a 2-0 deficit to win Game 6. And there was a winner-take-all game in Game 7 with Walter Johnson pitching. Now, here's the deal. Walter Johnson was unbeatable at that point. He was a god, and he'd just thrown two complete game victories. And the Pirates were spent. They didn't know what to do in terms of starting. And guess what also happened? Gigantic rains, a monsoon hit Pittsburgh for Game 7. The infield was soaked, and this was what they tried to do. You can look it up. The Pirates ground crew dumped barrels of gasoline on the dirt and tried to light it on fire to dry it out. Yeah, different environmental rules back then. Now, the Pirates manager was Bill McKechnie, and he tried to figure out how to juggle his pitching staff in the finale against Walter Johnson. At one point, he considered using Red Oldham to start Game 7 of the World Series, even though the 31-year-old left-handed pitcher had been sitting in the bullpen unused the entire World Series. He didn't pitch in one of the first six games. Now, Oldham had played for the Tigers in the 1910s and the early 1920s, but he did not exactly light the American League ablaze like the Pittsburgh infield with the ground crew trying to light fires on it. The most famous incident in Red Oldham's career prior to the World Series was Ty Cobb basically tackled him during a game because he thought he was a wimp. Now, Ty Cobb is probably not the best person for anger management, but I digress. Red Oldham bounced around the minor leagues in the late 1910s and early 1920s, and he got in trouble with the commissioner of baseball because he was playing in outlaw leagues. There used to be these leagues that you weren't allowed to play in because, I don't know, maybe they paid more, or maybe, I don't know what it was, but there were outlaw leagues. Probably had to do with gambling. And he would use an alias. But somehow, Oldham found himself on the Pirates midway through the 1925 season, and there were a bunch of injuries on the Pirates team, and they needed someone who could throw a ball with the left hand on their staff. And so, Red Oldham appeared in 11 games, four of them were starts, and he threw a couple complete games and recorded a save, and found himself on the World Series roster, even though he didn't play much for them that year. McKechnie did not start Red Oldham, and he turned to Vic Aldridge to start Game 7. Vic Aldridge won Game 5 for the Pirates. And Aldridge was terrible. He didn't make it out of the first inning. And the Senators had a 4-run lead for Walter Johnson. And Johnson kept that lead. And it looked like the Senators were going to just cruise to a Game 7 victory with 3 wins by Walter Johnson. But here's the deal. It was still raining. And it was still, the weather was still a mess. Now in the 7th inning, future Hall of Famer Pi Trainer tripled home the tying runs. But he tried to stretch out his triple to a homer inside the park homer to take the lead. He was thrown out at home. This game was weird. In the 8th inning, the top of the 8th, the Senators took the lead on a Roger Peckinpah home run. And then Bucky Harris, who was the player manager of the team, did not bring in a pinch hitter for Walter Johnson. He let Walter Johnson bat to pitch the 8th. And basically, he was going to let it ride with Walter Johnson. In the 8th inning, with the Senators having a lead, the rain started to pick up and it was pouring. And Commissioner Kennesaw Mountain Landis turned to the owner of the Washington Senators and said, "I'm going to call the game. Just going to call the game in 7 innings and declare the Senators world champs." And the Senators were a moment of indecisiveness away from winning the World Series. But instead, Landis decided to let the teams play in the downpour and the fog. Now, Walter Johnson was pooped. He was worn out. But he had a 7-6 lead with 2 outs and nobody on in the 8th. And he was 4 outs away from a World Series repeat. Earl Smith doubled for the Pirates. Carson Bigbee got an RBI double. And a walk and an error loaded the bases. And they still didn't bring in a reliever for Walter Johnson. He faced Hall of Famer Keke Kiler, who hit a drive into right field. Now, here's where things got weird, because there was no film of this game, and obviously no television. The Hall of Famer Keke Kiler hits a drive to right field in a decisive World Series game with the bases loaded, and he hit it into the fog. And the umpire declared it a ground rule double. The right fielder of the Senators, Joe Harris, said it was a foul ball by 10 feet. But the call stood, and 2 runs came in. And the Pirates took the lead. So here the Senators were a decision by the commissioner away from just calling the game. And a ball that, I have no evidence, but the only eyewitness says, yeah, it was a foul ball. That was the go-ahead hit in the World Series, Game 7, going to the 9th. But here's what happened. Because the Aldridge didn't get out of the first inning, and they had to use Johnny Morrison and Ray Kremer and Emil Yeed, I think is how you pronounce his name, the Pirates had to basically unload their staff. And they had used a pinch hitter in the bottom of the 8th. So they were in a position where now they suddenly had the lead and were 3 outs away from winning the World Series. But the Senators were going to bring up Sam Rice, Bucky Harris, and Goose Goslin. Now, you may not know those names, but all 3 of those players went on to be elected to baseball's Hall of Fame. So what did McKechnie do? He gave the ball to Red Oldham, the guy he hadn't used all series, the guy who only pitched 11 games for him all year, the guy who Ty Cobb thought was a wimp, the guy who was nearly barred from baseball for using an alias for playing in some weird outlaw league in Arizona. Now had to face 3 future Hall of Famers in the 9th inning of Game 7 of the World Series for his first and apparently only postseason appearance. Now he faced Sam Rice first, and he got him looking on a 2-2 count. With 1 away, with no balls and 2 strikes on Bucky Harris, he recorded an out with a line drive caught by Eddie Moore. Now only Goose Goslin remained. With a count 1 ball and 2 strikes, Goslin was called out looking, and Red Oldham had done it. He got the save, and the Pirates, in the pouring rain and mist, became the first team ever to erase a 3-game-to-1 hole and win the World Series. Now, manager Harris of the Senators was absolutely crucified by the press and by American League President Ben Johnson for leaving Walter Johnson in, instead of bringing in a reliever. But the Pirates won the title, and the most obscure Pirate had closed it out. By the next June, Oldham was let go, and he was not with the club when they won the 1927 pennant 2 years later. And he toiled in the minor leagues for a few years and retired and eventually died in California. And his deeds have faded with time, and his one moment of glory took place appropriately during a misty day that was hard to see, kind of like his foggy legacy. But his clutch performance, retiring 3 future Hall of Famers to clinch Game 7 of the World Series, should be recognized somewhere. So why not here on Locked On MLB? And now you know a little bit more about Red Oldham. Hey, let's talk a little bit about Built Bars, and I like Built Bars. I really do. I've got them in my fridge. If this were a video podcast, you would see me going to my fridge, picking out me a Built Bar. What do I got? I got the German chocolate cake. It's delicious. I got my mint brownie. You've got your chocolate raspberry, my personal favorite one. I'd show them to you, but this is not a visual podcast, and for that, I apologize. You're not crazy about those flavors? Guess what? There's nearly 20 flavors, some nut flavors, some nut-free flavors, and they taste great. They're 100% covered in chocolate. They're soft. They're easy to chew. They taste like a candy bar, but do you know what? They're also healthy. Built Bar is great if you're a health-conscious person trying to lose weight, trying to maintain weight. You want to have an indulgent treat, but not blow up everything, that all the positive things you're trying to do. Take the mint brownie, for example, which I have right here. 15 grams of protein, 110 calories, 4 grams of sugar, only 5 grams net carbs. What, are you kidding me? Go get them. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON to get $10 off your first order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. You know, Red Oldham was an obscure figure in the Pirates lore. Another person who is actually going to be in this year's In Memoriam video, which I'm putting together, is someone who almost became one of the great World Series heroes of all time, if not for a Mickey Mantle head fake. He would have been one of the names that we refer to as one of the clutch performers and one of the people who absolutely stared down destiny and wrote his name in baseball history, had it not been for a Mickey Mantle head fake. It's Hal Smith. Now, the 7th game of the 1960 World Series was a wild, dramatic game that's going to be remembered for all time, no matter what the outcome was. And as it turned out, that became the Bill Mazeroski game. That's the one where he hit the first ever World Series ending homer. If not for a head fake, the game would have been remembered forever as the Hal Smith game. All right, let's set the table a little bit. In 1960, the Yankees returned to the World Series after a 1-year absence. Remember, the White Sox won the pennant in 1959. And they looked to capture the World Series with just pure power. And they faced a Pirates team that just looked overmatched. The Yankees won games 16-3, 10-0, 12-0. They were just an absolutely manhandled the Pittsburgh Pirates. However, the Pirates won games by scores like 6-4, 3-2, 5-2. In virtually every statistical category, the series was lopsided in the Yankees' favor. But it went to a game 7 because the Pirates squeaked out 3 games. Now, the Pirates used a platoon of catchers in 1960. Smokey Burgess caught games against right-handed starters, and Hal Smith, a journeyman catcher, did so against left-handers. And Whitey Ford was not available for the finale because he won game 6 for the Yankees. Bob Turley was the Yankee starter, meaning Burgess got the call and Hal Smith rode the bench. That's right. This game that was almost Hal Smith's legacy in baseball history, he began the game riding the pine. Now, from the beginning, it was clear that Game 7 of the 1960 World Series was not going to be a pitcher's duel. Pirates first baseman Rocky Nelson homered in the first, Burgess singled in the second, and Bob Turley was lifted after only retiring three batters, so the Pirates built a 4-0 lead. But the Yankees came storming back with home runs by Mascaron and a 3-run homer by Yogi Berra, who was playing left field. You know, sometimes Yogi played around there, and I believe Elston Howard was the catcher by that point. The Yankees were leading 5-4 in the sixth. Burgess singled in the seventh and was the tying run with nobody on. And he was lifted for a pinch runner, but the Pirates couldn't drive him in. So Hal Smith came off the bench to fill in as catcher. The 29-year-old reserve was not even the most famous active catcher named Hal Smith at that point. The Cardinals had an all-star named Hal Smith. And until I did a little bit of research, I thought it was the same dude. But no, Hal Smith was the other Hal Smith on the Pirates. And he was now catching Roy Face. And the Yankees padded their lead. Johnny Blanchard, Cleet Boyer, both got a couple of RBI hits. And the Yankees were up 7-4, and it looked like they were pulling away, only six outs to go from winning the World Series, which they probably should have swept. In the bottom of the eighth, Gino Simone singled. Bill Verdon hit a ground ball that hit Tony Kubek in the neck. After a delay, Kubek was replaced by a utility infielder. Dick Groat singled. The Yankee lead was 7-5. Two outs. The Yankees are now four outs away from winning the World Series. And Roberto Clemente beat out a grounder. And a run came in, and now it was 7-6. Jim Coates was relieving for the Yankees. Up stepped Hal Smith. With two outs and the count two balls and two strikes, and Casey Stengel's Yankees four outs away from taking yet another title, and it would have been the third decade of which Casey Stengel would have managed the Yankees to a title, because he had managed them to the 1948 title and a bunch of them in the 50s. Now here was one in the 60s, four outs away, and Hal Smith came up and smashed a deep home run over Yogi Berra's head in left field. Suddenly, the Pirates were up 9-7. Four outs away from elimination, now they were three outs away from winning it all. And Forbes Field went insane as Hal Smith had struck the blow that looked like he was going to slay the Yankees once and for all. The Pirates had not won a World Series since Red Oldham got the 1-2-3 outs in the bottom of the ninth of the 25 World Series that I covered earlier in this very podcast. Now, 35 years later, they are on the verge, and another obscure player was going to be the man to lead the way. So Bob Friend came in to close out the World Series, but he allowed a couple of hits without retiring a batter. In came Harvey Haddix for the save. Haddix famously threw 12 perfect innings in a 1959 game before losing in the 13th. He was the reliever. He got a pop-up. Hal Smith caught it. And then, with Mickey Mantle on first, Yogi Berra grounded out to first. And there was one out, and Mantle appeared to be caught in a rundown. He was appeared to be caught in a World Series-ending base-running blunder. And he looked like all he had to do was tag him, and the Pirates would have won the World Series. Instead, he gave a head fake, which gave him just enough time and distracted the first baseman enough for him to dive back and grab first base and be safe as Gil McDougall scampered home to tie the game. All of a sudden, the lead that Hal Smith gave the Pirates was no more, because of Mantle's head fake and dive back to first. Haddock's retired Mouskarin, but the game was knotted at 9. Bill Mazeroski came to lead off the inning, bottom of the 9th, against Ralph Terry. He hit a 1-0 pitch over the same fence that Hal Smith hit his homer over. Now, forever the game was known for Mazeroski's homer. For most of us, they only know Mazeroski's homer. It's the only thing anyone knows about that game. Any montage of great World Series moments would include the Mazeroski homer. And the fame of that moment probably was the event that clinched Bill Mazeroski being put in the Hall of Fame. But think of how close it was to being Hal Smith's moment. He would have been the hero on the cover of the magazines. That blast would have been remembered for all time. Devoted Pirate fans would love and applaud Hal Smith's heroism. His deeds were so close to becoming immortal, if not for a Mickey Mantle head fake. And alas, here we are. Two players, Red Oldham, Hal Smith, who helped the Pirates win strange, unlikely Game 7s of the World Series, whose deeds have faded off but are still there. And that's one of the great things about baseball. The past, the present, the future are all still there. You just have to look for them. Sometimes dig a little deeper and take moments to salute Red Oldham and Hal Smith, especially if you're a Pirate fan. So go to the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app. You can like us wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're being safe at home these trying times, be sure to tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB or check out some of the other great shows on the Locked On Podcast Network, including Locked On Fantasy Baseball. Saluting Pirate champions of the past, this has been Locked On MLB for the 27th day of June, 2020. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.